Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It is Wednesday evening here in the DMV. Hope everyone is doing well. Yes, I am back in town after a couple of days down in Orlando for the NFL owners meeting, where we had a chance to talk with Josh Harris, Adam Peters, Dan Quinn, not to mention all kinds of folks from around the league. And I wanted to get into some of that, including two coaches that know two of these quarterbacks very well. Jim Harbaugh, new coach of the Chargers, of course, had J.J. McCarthy at Michigan, and Antonio Pierce, new head coach of the Raiders, or, you know, new full-time coach. He was the interim last year. He was at Arizona State when Jaden Daniels that's where Jaden Daniels began his career. So I had the chance to, at their when all the coaches were together to have their scrums with reporters, I had a chance to ask both of them about these guys and what is it that, you know, we need to know as people who've been, you know, with them closer than everybody else at this point. So I'll play some of that for you. I'll talk about some of the Jaden Daniels pro day today as well. Drake May goes on Thursday. In addition, though, we had some really interesting news today as it relates to the Commander Stadium. Nothing specific about that project, potential project, but has to do with what's going on with Monumental Sports. Of course, the Washington Wizards, Washington Capitals, Ted Leontis has been trying to move those franchises to Virginia, as we know. This kind of big, huge press conference in December. They're going to get this thing done, all that kind of stuff. Well, no, that's not going to happen. And we've talked about this for a bit now. I had Barry Zwerluga on a month ago to discuss this. And at that point, it already seemed like it was fading. Well, now it's not only officially done. The Leontis and Mayor Bowser have agreed to a deal for investment in Cap One, $515 million over 3 years. The deal... to keep the teams there, you know, going for years beyond that. So that has big implications for the Commanders, the way I see it. I asked Josh Harris specifically about this at the owners meeting. So joining me today here on this episode will be Eric Flack from WUSA, an investigative reporter who has been on top of the comings and goings here with regards to both the Wizards Caps Arena and the Commander Stadium. And I wanted to talk with him about that. What does he see as the implications now for the Commanders having with this deal getting done? So we'll get to all that here on this episode of the Standing Room Only podcast. Of course, make sure you subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you do your podcasting. Of course, you can also check out my work on The Athletic for subscribers. Two new articles up over the last couple of days. Did a What Adam Peters Said and What I Heard, and then some takeaways from what Josh Harris and Dan Quinn had to say yesterday, including what Josh Harris said about the stadium update and how he is paying attention to what's going on with Monumental. Doesn't have to pay attention anymore. But some interesting comments there that I wanted to highlight, and we talked about that with Eric as well. Let's get to some of the football stuff here at the top, though. So Jaden Daniels had his pro day today. I don't subscribe to the idea that these things mean a ton in terms of the on-field work. I'm sure there are certain things to keep an eye on, and like with most things in life, a lot of things happen over time to build up an impression. In this case, of the players, and, you know, Adam Peters and the scouts and others have been studying these players for not just weeks or months even, but years. You know, Jaden Daniels, along with these other guys, have been starters for more than just 1 year. Jaden Daniels has started over 50 games in college, played at a Pac-12 school, then transferred to the SEC. So clearly there's a lot there to dive into. And this is just one more sort of piece to consider. And it's a lot of it, I think, about how does the player handle himself? What's the camaraderie like with his teammates? It's another chance to meet with him, which I presume the Commanders have done by now. The pro day ended several hours ago. They met with him at the combine. They will eventually have him here at the facility for a top 30 visit, but this has happened today. I think a couple things to note. First off, the measurables. I think this is probably the more important stuff. Jaden Daniels measured in at 6'3 and change, 210 pounds. Clearly not exact. That's not exactly Adonis-like measurables. The weight is going to concern people, especially when you see those highlight reels of him just getting absolutely smashed at times by tacklers. I heard somebody on the NFL Network today, maybe it was Bucky Brooks, apologies if it wasn't, talk about that maybe he's got, you know, some spatial awareness issues relative that say a Lamar Jackson doesn't. And I've heard multiple people, you know, say, hey, he's not really a runner, he's more of a scrambler and all these types of things. But when you don't weigh what he weighs, when you weigh what he weighs, I should say, you got to get out of the way. Now, he isn't like rail thin. This isn't like an Emmanuel Forbes thing. When you look at him and you kind of think a stiff wind might blow him over. I think he's a sturdy guy. And obviously he was able to maintain playing despite taking these hits. But nonetheless, it's a concern on that front. But there's a lot of other things, obviously very positive with Jaden Daniels. His last season at LSU, you know, he won the Heisman. That says a lot. But it was pretty spectacular and breathtaking throughout. I had a chance to talk to some of his teammates at the Senior Bowl, and they just talked about, you know, great guy. They were just in awe of how he improved. I tweeted that story out today, and you can read that. It was about from a month or so ago about the potential choice of two being Drake May or Jaden Daniels. So you can check that out. And this is what the teams are doing right now. They are learning more about these prospects. Dan Quinn told us at the owners' meeting that, hey, anybody who thinks we know what we're doing yet on this, tell us, because we haven't gotten there yet. But he's still himself going through the tape. You know, he's been busy with free agency and putting together a staff and just figuring out what's going on here. And like I said, there's still these checkpoints to come, these various meetings. They still want to talk to other people about these players, get as much information as possible. So I don't think they're there yet. But as I did in my mock draft, if you made me pick somebody right now, I probably would go Jaden Daniels based on the evaluations that I've received from others around the league, not Washington, but others around the league who, you know, do their own homework, have their own thoughts of how they see these quarterbacks. And it did seem to be some separation between Jaden Daniels and then the Drake May, JJ McCarthy faction, even though McCarthy has now entered the conversation more robustly, the public conversation robustly. I think the league seemed to be, as they are, always ahead of the curve on that. You know, in terms of the actual performance today, again, he showed he's got enough arm, I think. He did a lot of, you know, made a lot of good throws. Now, I did speak to a source who was there, and this source said that he counted 5 balls hit the ground. One was a drop, and the other 4 there were some overthrows I saw. I watched the majority of it, but I was doing, you know, I may have missed a couple throws here and there. And I asked, well, where does that rank on the good bad scale? And he said, actually, it's probably below average. Again, this is throwing against air. Take the ball, chuck it to a receiver down the field. And he doesn't just have receivers. He's got Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas. Both could go in the top 15 picks in this draft. So to that extent, I don't know how much you're docking him for that, but that many drops below average is something I think, again, I don't even want to say of note because I don't really know how much this really weighs into anything. But nonetheless, they did it. He threw, you know, he did work today that he didn't do at the combine, including the measurables. He skipped the 40 and the bench and the 3-cone drill and those types of things. Other than throwing, he didn't do the rest of it. So, you know, I imagine whatever Washington thought of him before, they probably think something similar, but it is these personal interactions that they have which will probably more impact, you know, whether they are gung-ho for him or a little bit more lukewarm than whatever happened out there today. Same for Drake May on Thursday, although I wonder with Drake May, a lot of the scouts I spoke with talked about some sort of poor footwork and maybe some setbacks, from Drake May's 2022 season, which was pretty spectacular. The sources I talked to, and you can read out there as well, thought he did take some step backs in some ways, including with his footwork. And there may be a variety of reasons for that, including, you know, UNC just lost some pieces, new offensive coordinator, whatever it was. So maybe that will be the type of thing you want to see his footwork at this pro day and see if that makes you feel better. If you're a team that had some questions, nonetheless, you know, all these guys, including McCarthy, should be picked pretty high in this draft one way or the other. Now, as I said, we had a chance to talk to some of these coaches in the league, including Antonio Pierce and Jim Harbaugh. So I wanted to play for you just a little bit of this. Not telling you this is revelatory. I'm just saying this is what they had to say about these guys that they know well. And let's start with Harbaugh, since I haven't talked about JJ McCarthy here. Again, if you're a regular listener here, you know that over a month ago, Randy Mueller, two-time NFL general manager, now works with the Athletic, said here flat out that he thinks JJ McCarthy is not only one of the better quarterback prospects in the league, but he would probably pick him over Drake May, who he had questions about. And at that point, I wasn't hearing too many people suggesting that about McCarthy. And now here we are, where it feels like he's going to be a top 4 or 5 pick and possibly even ahead of Drake May, maybe even ahead of Jaden Daniels, depending on what happens with Washington. Again, I don't put much stock in anybody suggesting they think they know what is going to happen. That Tom Pelissero, I won't even say report, but his comment the other day that he talked to people that know Adam Peters and they think the guy for Peters would be McCarthy. That's not a report. That's not a anything other than he asked people for their opinion and they offered one. But that said, that's, you know, somebody saying, you know, that gets out there, the McCarthy could go 2. I had McCarthy going 3 in my mock draft to New England. I don't and know what the Patriots think. In talking to people, it seems to be that they think that Drake May would be more up New England's alley than McCarthy. Again, we will see in time. But here we go with Jim Harbaugh. I just flat out, hey, you know this guy. Tell us about JJ McCarthy. Here is Jim Harbaugh at the NFL owners meeting.
Yeah. Top 4, he's probably one of them. In terms of just coming to the league as a rookie, what's the challenge for him or any of these guys to make that jump from college to pro?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's you know, I used to think it was like when you went from high school JV to varsity, that was a big jump. You know, when you go from high school to college, that's a big jump. And then going from college to pro, big jump, but the same jump. But, you know, what I've noticed is that jump's not as big anymore. I mean, guys are coming from high school to college and their quarterbacks, you know, is one of those positions now where they're ready and they play quicker. Going from college to pro, they're able and ready to play quicker. You know, why is that? I mean, there's probably a bunch of reasons, but they're just really well trained. They're really well trained coming out of high school. They're really well trained coming out of college. I mean that the workout JJ had. I've been to a lot of pro day workouts and watched quarterbacks throw. That was the best I've ever seen a quarterback do at a pro day. I mean, not only was feet great in the individual drills but then he started throwing and it was like every throw was, you know, right there. I thought our receivers did a great job too. They all had a great day, but that was the best throwing day I've ever seen. And then, you know, hear coaches and GMs, you know, come up to me and say, hey, you know, great job with JJ. And, you know, like I predicted, once they were around him, I was hearing the stories about how he is on the board, how he is on the field, the little things, the intangibles. I mean, it was absolutely no surprise whatsoever. But there was raving. I mean, it was great to hear, incredible here. I know it was sincere. It was unsolicited, you know. But I mean, there's numerous GMs, numerous head coaches, couldn't say enough good things. And it was, I mean, you could just see it, right? I mean, his pro day, well, I've never seen a better one.
What is his winning mentality? The amount of winning that's
still important, right? To win? Right, yeah. I mean, the most important thing. It speaks for itself. JJ's a winner.
Jim, in 2011.
All right, Harbaugh, basically the way these scrums work is all the coaches are sitting at a round table. Typically, it's the local beat writers are there with some cameras, and then everybody else is kind of milling in and out. Obviously, Harbaugh, one of the more popular figures because of who he is and, what he represents and how, coming off a national title in college, and he's a big name. So he got a lot of questions, and then somebody else came in later and asked him as well about McCarthy, and this is where he said the line, like, look, this guy's a killer. So he was pretty enthusiastic about it, but look, I'm sure he wants his guy to do well, but, I didn't take it as some perfunctory statement. I took it as something that he generally believes, and obviously he won a national title with the guy, and they were 27-1 over 2 years, so I'm pretty positive he feels good vibes about McCarthy. The question is, how does that translate? He seems to think it really will. Now, Antonio Pierce, he did not coach Jaden Daniels at LSU, but he did have him at Arizona State. And, again, I had a chance to talk to him. I think JP Finley, who was on the podcast with me yesterday, and he was with me there talking to Pierce. And we both kind of, peppered him with some questions as quickly as we could to get before we got out of the way for the local beat. So here is Antonio Pierce about Daniels. And he said, hey, I kind of had a feeling that this trajectory of his could go. Here is Antonio Pierce.
You had mentioned at the combine that you're a go-getter and that you have to be aggressive and potentially trade up. You'd be open to that. Do you feel like that's within the realm of possibility?
I think everything's on the table. Whatever makes the Raiders better, I'm all for it. When I say I'm a go-getter, meaning whatever it takes to win, whatever it takes to get the best player to make our team the best, that's what I want to do, and that's what I like to see us do. Tom Telesco has a lot more experience in the drafts than myself. I'm going to lean on him and his expertise on what we should do. And if it's the right fit and that guy there that we want is a Raider and he fits the Raider culture in our way, then we'll go get him.
I know you can't give away your evaluation, but there are some pretty good quarterbacks in this draft. What's it been like now being a head coach to be able to assess that position? And what have you seen so far from this group?
Yeah, it was good. Going at the combine, these pro days, getting around these prospects. They're all ultra competitive, and that's what I like about them. You look at them, there's a few quarterbacks that got over 50 plus starts. There's some guys that, three and done and one and done, for that matter. But what you're looking for is a leader. You're looking for somebody that wants to come in, like I was asked earlier, to come in that room and be competitive, give us that edge. And again, if it's a rookie, if it's Aiden, if it's Minshew, if it's Brown, we're going to put the best player out there that gives us a chance to win.
You obviously know Jaden from back in the day. Did you see when you were with him this type of a rise or potential out of him?
Yeah, I thought he'd be a Heisman winner. I did. That was my recruiting pitch to him. I just thought it would be where I was at previously.
Do you think his game could translate to the NFL?
If you win a Heisman, most likely you guess. When you look at Jaden and all these quarterbacks, extremely talented. One thing about him that I think separates the rest is his ability to run. He can run. When you can run like that in the SEC and put up those kind of numbers, I think that translates very well.
You think he can bulk up for the pros, or does he need to?
I think he's just let nature take its course. Obviously he's been doing it as a slim athlete throughout his whole career. So I think just with being the nature of a man, you'll get bigger as you go along. So he'll be fine.
All right, so there you go. And by the way, if you missed it, we had on Phil Longo, former offensive coordinator at North Carolina for both Sam Howell and Drake May. So you can go back and check that podcast. So that means we have had a head coach or an offensive coordinator for all these players. Well, I guess I take that back. Pierce was a defensive coach, but nonetheless, he was there, and he said he helped recruit Daniel. So they are that's some pretty good insight into these quarterbacks that Washington is likely to choose from. All right, before I get to Eric Flack, I did want to just get into one thing. I have been talking about what Washington is going to do with their back seven under Dan Quinn. They obviously signed Frankie Louvu and Bobby Wagner at linebacker. They got Jeremy Chinn at safety. They got some Mike Davis at cornerback. But I think I'm mostly focusing here. What I'm discussing now is, you know, what's the formation? Last year, Dallas played nickel or dime in 94% of their snaps, according to True Media. And that didn't surprise me. This is where this league is going. Washington barely ever played with more than two linebackers on the field. A lot of teams are kind of going in this direction. We, you know, Cam Curl and the big nickel package, right? All these things have been happening. But I did have a couple of people on Twitter, and I apologize, I don't have their names in front of me. I think one was this guy Road Chaser, who's a frequent commenter, and some others saying to me, hey, how much do you really think that's what Quinn wants to do, or how much was that from last year because they just had so many injuries at linebacker? And I'll just be, I'm honest, like, there's been so much going on the last, you know, couple, you know, 50 days or whatever it is, with the firing of Rivera, with the hiring of Peters, then Quinn, then a whole staff, then we get into free agency and this quarterback stuff is happening, et cetera. So, you know, I've checked into some things, but there's a lot more homework to do. So, but I did take that comment to heart and I looked it up and then I asked some more questions. And, you know, I do think that 94% is a bit overstated. Now, I'm not saying that they're going to go traditional 4-3 all the time with Jamin Davis presumably being the third guy. You still hear a lot about Dan Quinn liking safeties, liking these three safeties, sorry, that he did a lot. And I think the question here is, and this is similar to the Cam Curl when he was coming up piece, is, you know, in this era where teams are so pass heavy, but you also can't abandon trying to stop the run, that these bigger safeties start getting more work. And when we talked to Quinn on Tuesday at the owners meeting, you know, he said, look, what he likes about, one of the things he likes about Jeremy Chinn is that he is a guy that can really stick his nose in there at the line of scrimmage. He can cover tight ends, that he really sees him somewhere with Frankie Louvu as a guy going forward, attacking the line more than playing in center field. So, you know, there may be a scenario where Chinn is ultimately sort of that third linebacker slash fifth defensive back. I don't know, you know, we'll have to see what that means in terms of the other safeties, you know, and the other cornerbacks as well. I imagine that room, just like most of the positions, is not settled yet. And so we'll see how that works. But I did just want to say that, like, I may have overstated the idea of just simply, hey, that 94% mark, expect that. They did have injuries at linebacker. I think also, independent of that, you know, somebody asked me, I did a Twitter Q&A yesterday, right before my flight to back to D.C., and somebody asked me how many snaps did I think Jamin Davis was going to have this year. And I was like, look, you know, it's kind of hard to say, but Louvu and Wagner both played almost 100% of their snaps last year. So I don't know how much room there's going to be for Jamin Davis, except for the fact that Louvu, similar to Micah Parsons in Dallas, is going to play all over the formation. Quinn said he was excited to ask him specifically that. Is he essentially the Micah Parsons from a position standpoint? And he kind of said, yeah. He's a guy he can see playing everywhere. So I guess if there's a world where Louvu's lined up at edge, where Jamin Davis is the second linebacker, then, you know, that's a way to get him on the field. But another way, I guess, could be playing three linebackers if they want to do that. And they, I guess, will do that more than that 94% suggests. So I just wanted to explain that. We still have room to go here with regards to the roster. You know, I don't know if anything is set at safety, though. You do have, obviously, Chinn. You have Derek Forrest. You have Quan Martin. You have Jeremy Reeves. You have Percy Butler. That kind of may be it. And between Martin, who I think did show a lot as the season progressed as another versatile piece, and Forrest, possibly as like your starting tandem, you know, there could be a lot of three safety looks. Right now, you know, there's questions at cornerback overall. So that could be in place with Chin as essentially that third linebacker, but there could be actual three linebackers out there as well, a little more than I anticipated. So that is that. All right, let's get to this other story, though, with regards to the Commanders. And, you know, as I said, Josh Harris talked about the stadium situation. He was asked about it in multiple ways. I asked him about the Wizards Monumental Capitals part of all this as well. And I do want to just read you some of that before I get to the Eric Flack interview. So he was asked just flat out, you know, where are you at in the process right now? And he talked about how the NFL approved an $86 million loan for improvements at FedEx Field. But he also said, quote, but now we're also focused on our new home. And so in that regard, we're in pretty deep. We're doing site plans across three jurisdictions. We're in deep discussion with Maryland, but at the same time, we're continuing to pursue the possibility of having a site at RFK. And that process is a political process, end quote. And he kept talking more about how obviously DC got to get control of the land from the federal government. Seems like that is happening. It's had certainly trending strongly in that direction. But then there are still questions within the DC government about funding. Do people actually want this to happen, especially now that they have committed $515 million to Capital One Arena? So I just think that's a good backdrop to consider. And that's what sort of the basis for Eric and I talking about this. We start with what's the news of Monumental. You guys know I'm interested in that. And then we transition over to the Commander Stadium. So here we go. Eric Flack with WUSA and myself here on the Standard Room Only podcast. All right, a busy day here in the DMV, and nobody busier than our guest, Eric Flack from WUSA, who has been all over both the saga with Monumental Sports and possibly moving to Virginia, now staying in D.C., as well as the Commanders' pursuit of a new stadium. These things are all tied together, so I wanted to have Eric on about this. He just left Cap One, where Mayor Bowser and Ted Leonsis were speaking. So I guess we can just, first off, thanks for doing this, because I know it's a crazy day for you.
Oh, no, anytime.
But let's just start there, and then we'll work our way to the Commanders. Clearly, this deal with Virginia seemed to be falling apart, but now it is officially apart, and they're staying in D.C. Give us the background on what happened there. How did we get to this point where the Wizards and Caps are staying in D.C.?
You know, I think one of the biggest revelations from the press conference that just happened was this, you know, cloak and dagger that even after staying, even after signing that deal in Virginia, Mayor Bowser and Ted Leonsis were meeting privately, secretly, although he took a shot at investigative reporters like me for not like knowing about it because they were at the Waldorf, but meeting with Mayor Bowser at the Waldorf to continue conversations. And at least publicly, he is now positioning this as he knew all along that Virginia was not a done deal, was not a guarantee. And he is a shrewd businessman, always wanted to keep the idea of coming back to DC on the table. And that's kind of, whether that's true or not, that's the reality of where we ended up. So we now know that conversations between the two really never broke off. And I think he even answered a question to which he was asked, did Governor Youngkin know that you were doing this? And he says he told Governor Youngkin, if it's not looking good, I'm going to keep on talking to DC. And that's what he did. And so, you know, while it seems like it came together quickly, based on what was said in the press conference, I think the story is that they have been kind of working out a backup plan all along. And that is what came to fruition. So I think when things truly went south in DC, he said the attorney general's letter threatening litigation had nothing to do with it. But when things truly went south in Virginia, I think he definitely had a platform to say, okay, you're my second choice. If you're cool with that, and the city needed it, they were cool with that. Let's get a deal done. And that's what happened.
I'm trying to process that because obviously, you know, earlier today, Ted was tweeting a whole bunch of things about good things were happening at Capital One, money being made at the Zach Bryan concert and, you know, the Capitals and the Wizards and season ticket renewals, and that it's all about sort of maintaining this relationship with the city. And then you're like, oh, this is kind of weird. All these tweets simultaneously all at once. And then a few hours later, this news happened. So it seemed like he was getting ahead of the news. And in my head, I'm going to sort of maintain that assumption. But look, obviously this thing has been falling apart with Virginia for a bit. I think there was a lot of skepticism from the jump. I guess to what degree that the deal is ultimately $515 million over 3 years. Am I right? In terms of the investment?
That's correct.
So do you think?
Yeah. I mean, and we're going to have to do that. Listen, you've been Cap One many times. I mean, you can't do it all at once, right? I mean, it's just impossible. I mean, the teams are still playing there.
100%. So it's going to take some time and all that. It just feels like a very big step, even in the world of politics, to go at it on the limb as much as he did, to face such vitriol from the district, from fans, to get a deal that ultimately was almost exactly what Mayor Bowser said the day that he had the press conference. So that's the part where I'm like, well, did he really have to goad her into this by going through this whole production?
No, I think two things happened. I think one, Mayor Bowser knew that she proverbially dropped the ball and let it get to this point.
Right.
I think two, give him credit in this respect, although there were so many missteps, so many with the Virginia move and the Alexandria move. And you know, you just can't understand how people who are this successful at politics and business, meaning Virginia, a governor, and a guy who's a billionaire, owns sports teams, could have kind of fumbled this so badly. Give him credit for knowing he always needed a backup plan, and the district was going to be his best backup plan. And so I think that's, for all he did wrong, that's what he did right, is to make sure that he had another option on the table. And I was always wondering if egos would get involved of them coming back together after all everything that had happened, if Virginia fell apart. And I think they made a pretty transparent effort at the press conference to say, hey, what's done is done. We're here now. We're all happy now. We're staying. And so I think they did a good job of that in presenting a very united front and a very positive front for a deal that keeps, you know, him here and the teams here until 2050. The mayor was asked about guarantees, and she said there's going to be some language that clearly is going to trigger some sort of large buyout if that deal ever gets, you know, kind of not violated is the wrong word, but tried to adjust again as he tried to get out of it early this time.
Yeah, no, and that makes all sense. And look, at the end of the day, look, politics is... You need sharp elbows for politics. In theory, it's not personal. It is just everybody trying to push forward their agenda to the degree that they think they need to. And I guess to some degree, that is what happened here. Now, as I said, this is all interesting as it relates to the Commanders. And before I spin it to that quickly, I do want to ask you this. So this $515 million, it really did seem, as much as I enjoy poking Ted for the missteps that you mentioned, it did feel very much like the district that the mayor dropped the ball. How much do you think, and I don't know if this is even known, how much do you think they would have looked to put into reinvesting in the arena if this had happened earlier, if it had never gotten to the point where he had this press conference, or do you think the $500 million was maybe the number kind of all along.
And we'll segue to the Commanders here because I think it relates to this question. You know, it was clear that the mayor had set a price tag at $500 million. It was also clear that she really dragged her feet on in locking that deal down.
Right.
They lowballed him. They didn't offer him the $500 million at first. And so I think that she always knew that she wants the Commanders too. She wants them all.
Right.
And as much as it would hurt her legacy, if she lost the Wizards and the Caps through this crazy sequence of events, she now has an opportunity to cement her legacy as the mayor who reunified all of DC sports in the district. So I think she was playing a bit of a you know, hedge or bets game. She didn't want to offer too much to where the Commanders would be a non-starter. And, you know, there's a lot of talk online, a lot of reactions, and I'm hearing them from my friends and you know, on social media platforms. Was she overpaid? He had nowhere else to go. Why would she even give him the 500 and now 15 million and 15 of it is going into improving the neighborhood? But Monumental gets the buildings, which is one of the reasons he wanted to leave in the first place. The reason is because she didn't want to mess around this time.
Absolutely.
She had a second bite at the apple, and she wasn't going to, you know, negotiate and have him pay a DC tax penalty for coming back to the table. That offer, I was always told, was always on the table, non-wavering, and she was more than happy for him to ultimately accept it.
Yeah, I mean, my personal stance has been, I just think, without, you know, I'm not a politician, and I don't know all the DC ins and outs of the budgets or whatever, but that Cap One, what it represents, I know there's some tough times there right now because of crime and just, you know, the Wizards are terrible and things like that, but like it was more instrumental, important to the city from a geography standpoint and the amount of date standpoint, 253 dates a year versus a stadium out at the RFK site, which is, you know, 50 dates a year. And you can tell me all you want about a mini city, but it's not as connected to the area as Cap One and Nats Park is. But now this all brings us back to the Commanders, because now that this has happened, you're right. I thought for a while that, like, she was taking her eye off the ball, that, like, clearly Leontis had made noise about wanting to have improvements, and they're all in about, you know, dapping up Josh Harris. And I did feel like, hey, maybe she's putting her eye on the wrong thing. Well, okay. So now that she's locked in the Wizards, there were already enough people in the DC government saying, hey, we really shouldn't be spending a lot of this money on any of this stuff. And that was before they just made this investment. I can't comprehend how from a budgetary standpoint, how this gets done for them to say they're going to now give the Commanders whatever the number is going to be, something significant to get that done. I find that hard to believe, which is why, to me, I think maybe one of the big winners today was Maryland, because I just think this puts them even more of the driver's seat. But you're talking to more people than I am. What do you think?
Well, I don't think you're wrong in that saying today was a good day for Maryland's pursuit of the Commanders. But I think something else, and I think today was a, quite honestly, a bad day for Virginia's potential pursuit of the Commanders. I don't think, and you were out at the meetings, you heard what Josh Harris said. I don't think Josh Harris at this point, this is just me reading the tea leaves, talking to a few people, but mostly reading the tea leaves, I don't think he wants any part of what happens in Virginia when you try to build a new stadium. I mean, It failed for Jack Kent Cooke with Governor Wilder decades ago. It failed for Ted Leonsis. I mean, I'm not even sure Virginia is a great match for the way he builds stadiums and the way his vision is working up in Philadelphia for the new basketball arena he's building there. But as it relates to DC, for sure, somebody else texted me and said, why does she think this is such a guarantee? This could just be the same thing as what happened in Virginia. They may have a big announcement. Two things. One, they have signed a memorandum of agreement that this is going to happen. So he has a signed document with the city, which he never had in Virginia. Number two, DC council members, have kind of been split, to use a generous term, on the Commanders deal. But, with the basketball arena, the Capital One money, there was a members only meeting, a council members only meeting hours before the announcement, which everybody kind of got on board. We're lockstep with this. The reason I think that's relevant is I think it's hard to compare the two. I think it's hard to say, well, they did this, so they might not do the football stadium. That was a different deal. We had them. We were about to lose them. You mentioned how important they are. The council was all on board, and they all wanted him back. And they're all going to approve this money on when it's voted on, or a majority are. And they wouldn't have gone forward this way, in this manner, with the announcement, if that meeting didn't go well. The football stadium is going to be a different debate. I mean, Josh Harris does invest a lot of his own money in these sorts of projects. We don't know what the dollar figure is going to be. We don't know what the opponents, who have been loud but have dwindled ever since Dan Snyder left,
for sure,
how big a hill they're going to like plant their flag in and die on. So is it going to be hard to find the money? Yes, they found the money for the Capital One improvements renovation plan out of a capital budget, not capitals, but capital budget, meaning buildings, stuff like that. It's not coming out of schools. It's not coming out of, social services. That's a different budget. So in theory, those two budgets don't impact each other. Could they do that again with a potential, Commander Stadium? Could they, do the bond thing? Because again, bonds are different than how they're paying for the arena. How they're paying for the arena is just taking money out of a capital budget that's already kind of there. Bonds are like you go and put the full faith of the credit in the city behind a loan. And they didn't have to tap that, that option here. So I think those who say there's no money left for the Commanders to return to RFK are probably a little premature. And I reached out to the mayor's office during the press conference and asked them straight out. And they said, no, this changes nothing. We still want the Commanders too. We want them back at RFK.
I take everything you're saying at face value, and you're the one reporting on this far more than I am. They're going to say that, of course. I just find it hard to believe it. Because like I said, for me, forget the Wizards part, the Cavs part. I just, for all along, thought, I never really bought into the Virginia, not only these clusters, Fs things, but like just the geography of it all. It didn't work. And I know people don't love going to Landover. I'm maybe one of those people. But again, they have home field advantage. They're already there, right? There's something to be said for incumbency. But DC was the nostalgic pull, and that still remains. I'm sure Josh Harris and his druthers would probably rather go to RFK. I just finding it hard to believe, again, without, this isn't based on facts, this is just based on instinct and reading things and having talked to people as well. Now, what did you make of this, though? So we had Josh Harris yesterday, and he was asked about this whole process. Where are you at? He said, quote, we are in deep discussion with Maryland, but at the same time, we're continuing to pursue the possibility of having a site at RFK. Deep discussion with Maryland. I do feel like in the conversation we're all having, Maryland has been completely put aside because people are just assuming that if you can get the RFK, you will. And obviously there's been progress with Congress. It looks like the DC is going to get control of the site. So that part is cleared up. And then it does come down to what does the council think. But what did you make of the deep discussion with Maryland? Did you make that as notable?
Yes, I did. And here's why. If you look at, and I learned this when I went up to Philly to look at the basketball arena he's trying to build there. And even that hasn't been approved. And he's paying for it with his own money, or wants to. But his philosophy is uplifting a community economically that needs it in a way that will also benefit my business, because I get a new stadium or a new arena. Win-win. You can pretty much note that Northern Virginia, one of the richest areas in the United States, does not check that box.
Right.
You could argue that that part of DC and DC in general does check that box, because even though it's well off, we've struggled, we've lost, you know, jobs, that sort of thing. Maryland and Prince George's County checks that box four times over. Prince George's County is a largely predominantly African-American county that has not seen the economic growth that a lot of the area has, DMV has. Maryland and Prince George's County are already investing a ton of money in what's known as the Blue Line Corridor, meaning the Blue Line Metro, to do what FedEx Field was supposed to do decades ago, which is bring up everybody around it. I have no doubt. And oh, by the way, the land is there. it's ready to go.
Right.
Like we got no more bureaucratic red tape to get through like we do in DC. And we don't have a fight with the city council. You got leaders in Maryland and in Prince George's County are like, please. And in DC, you got some who are like, we need housing there. We don't. I get your nostalgia, but we can use the land, and we're running out of land. We can do more with this land.
Right.
That automatically makes Maryland, if not a favorite, a contender. And so I think everything you're reading is right. I think it's just the nostalgia question. It's also the money question. Maryland has a stadium authority, as I'm sure you know, that doles out money for the Oriole Park at Camden Yards, Ravens Stadium. They're doling out more money. Comes from the lottery. It's lottery revenues. Doling out more money for renovations. And, you know, they're more than happy to spend the money on stadiums in Maryland. They got no issues. There's no philosophical debate that has to be had in Maryland about that. And for all those reasons, from a businessman's standpoint, you know, people went to FedEx Field at 1.2 and the team was okay. You know, and if you build a first-class stadium, despite what people say about where it is, you know, they might go back out there, you know. And so I think you're actually right on about that. And I think Josh Harris saying deep discussions means there's really nowhere else to have meaningful discussions right now. Because Maryland is the only one of the three options that has all the different boxes checked. Money, land, politicians who want it, philosophical impact and you know, community impact.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, look, we still got a little bit of a ways to go. I'm sure Harris is going to want to see through the RFK, the politics of the RFK situation before any, you know, he gets anywhere. There's no, you know, it's just like the quarterback situation. They have it too. They may have an idea. They're not telling us, but there's still a month to go. You might as well play to mix metaphors, play all 9 innings and see where this goes and see what other information comes up before making a decision. But it does feel like Maryland has the lead. So I guess I'll just ask you then before we go, what do you think ultimately does happen here? Where do you think it ultimately lands?
I don't know. I've been covering this for a minute, as you know, and I've given different answers to this question, probably to you. Josh Harris would sure like to be the guy that brings the Commanders back to RFK. And yep. He's got a mayor that wants to see it happen. And to your point, what has he always said? What does he say to you guys? I'm a guy who likes all the information. I just want all the information, whether it's a quarterback or a stadium. So the fact that he's in like deep discussions with Maryland, I could be wrong. I don't think that's going to preclude him from making sure he has all the information about DC. The House should give that land back to the city. Those conversations can start in earnest once that happens. And, and Josh Harris is currently moving or trying to move the Sixers from the outskirts of Philly, where all the arenas and stadiums are. Phillies, Eagles, Flyers, Sixers, they're all out there in that one part of Southside Philly. He's trying to bring the Sixers by themselves to downtown Philly, the middle of downtown. He's a downtown guy. And he has the emotional connection. So I'm gonna keep my money on DC, but as they say in Vegas, the odds are not, probably you would not be getting the odds on that one over a more easy, less headache filled choice than the old Prince George's County, Landover, Raul John back in the day. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh yeah,
Raul John. FedEx Field, Raul John.
Yeah, that whole site, it always amazed me that they put the stadium there knowing the traffic headaches when they had the original Capitol Center there for 20,000 people. And I was like, wait, you're putting it there for four times as many people? But, that happened. And here we are all these years later still debating. Can you go somewhere else? And at the moment, we'll see. Eric, great job. You've really been killing it on both of these arena and stadium stories. So we appreciate the work and you're doing at WUSA. Keep it up. And, you finish this one story, on to the Commanders now. We'll see what happens.
On to the next one. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.
All right. That was, really great information from Eric, who's really has been kind of all over this story for WUSA, including back when Dan Snyder was still the owner and they were debating, the various Dumfries and things like that. I do just want to add one note. This is just me speculating. And, look, obviously, this is none of this stuff matters relative to what we saw the other day happen in Baltimore with the unbelievable tragedy of the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsing and the loss of life. I think last I heard, six people were presumed dead and obviously incredibly tragic. It did bring to mind, well, wait, if they're going to have to build a bridge, I'm fascinated by how this works myself. How quickly does it take to build a bridge? How much does that cost in modern days? But I've seen that, President Biden said that he would push for the federal government to pay for it. So I guess at least in that regard, again, no comparison. But if Maryland's going to have to allocate all the money for that, maybe that would completely change some of these dynamics. And I could be completely talking out of my, as Eric was talking about with DC, some of these monies are coming from different budgets. But look, at the end of the day, it is still money. It is still the state or the district. Everybody seems to be having financial shortfalls these days. And, there is the age old debate. What makes the most sense? Does it make sense to invest money into these stadiums, or does it make sense to, infrastructure or helping the community? I'm a big infrastructure guy, for what it's worth. I've been talking for years that, every time I go over the Key Bridge, I'm like, this thing feels, it feels like it's, pretty old and needs to be dealt with and all that stuff. So I'm just guessing that Maryland, if what President Biden said is accurate, that Maryland is not going to have to dip into some other pool of money. Again, if you're a political person, you want to hit me up, bstandig@theathletic.com, and feel free to tell me what I'm getting wrong. But that was just a thought that I had, because obviously it's fresh in our minds. And again, just an unbelievably tragic scenario. I some of that I went to UMBC, University of Maryland, Baltimore County, spent many days down in the Inner Harbor. This bridge, connects to the city, and that's what matters the most, far more than any of this. But I did think about that, and at least just wanted to mention it. All right. Many thanks to Eric Flack for his time. Thanks to everyone here for checking out the podcast. Of course, we'll have more coming up as the Commanders continue to move forward here. The Drake May Pro Day is on Thursday, so I'm sure we'll talk about that if there's things to discuss as we move forward. But that is it for now. Ben Standick signing off. Until next time. See ya.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.